Today on Straight Talk Africa, following the lifting of the state of emergency 2 months early, the Ethiopian new Prime Minister, Dr. Abiy Ahmed, continues to show signs of what some call a political trajectory change. Whereas on the economic front, he has also announced the partial liberalization of state-owned firms, such as the nation's flag carrier, the Ethiopian Airlines. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all of our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Haydee Adams-Fitzpatrick, and I'll be your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion and analysis on the current political developments in Ethiopia.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook and Twitter comments, and we're going to reveal some of them straight ahead here on Straight Talk Africa.
Ethiopia is looking up, and observers say the new authorities in Addis Ababa seem to be agents of socio-economic change. My colleague Paul Diho has more.
Sweeping changes are underway in Ethiopia. New Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is rapidly putting forward long overdue reforms in the Horn of African nation of over 100 million people, arguably Africa's second most populous country. The 41-year-old Abiy, who took office on April 2nd, is Africa's youngest head of state. Some are calling him Prime Minister Bolt, after Usain Bolt, the Olympic sprint champion from Jamaica, as he makes good on promises made prior to becoming Prime Minister. On June 5th, the government-imposed state of emergency was lifted. 2 months ahead of schedule, tens of thousands of political prisoners have also been released. The notorious Mekelewa prison has been closed, and Abiy is vowing to amend the constitution to limit the prime minister's post to 2 terms. Real efforts are underway to bring peace with its neighbor Eritrea after nearly 2 decades of border skirmishes and a 2-year war. On the economic front, Ethiopia is now one of Africa's fastest-growing economies, and Prime Minister Abiy has recently announced the partial liberalization of state-owned firms, including Ethiopian Airlines and Ethiotelecom, the telecom's monopoly. The move opens the door for uncapped economic activity and growth in the country. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. For reaction, we are joined live via Skype by Dr. Awol Kasim Alo, lecturer at Keir University Law School in the United Kingdom. Good evening, Dr. Awol.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
You look terrific.
Thank you.
Later in the program, we will give our we'll give our audience a chance to call in with your question or comment. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Let me come back to you, Dr. Awol, immediately. What is your immediate reaction to the developments in your homeland, Ethiopia?
I think your reporter there is absolutely right in saying that what Abiy is doing is the political equivalent of what Usain Bolt does in the field usually. This is precisely because when you look at Ethiopia as a state, its history, not necessarily going back very long, but just the history of the last 27 years and how divided that country is and how political power is concentrated in the hands of a very small minority of elites. Given that context, I think the pace with which things are moving and with which the prime minister and his government is pushing is just incredible. And I think for people who have been observing Ethiopian politics very, very closely, nobody thought things would change that quickly. So, and I think I do agree with that characterization. And I think He has been doing a phenomenal job in terms of bringing people together, lifting the spirit of the people, not just through touring within Ethiopia and speaking to people, listening to people, but also in terms of the foreign visits that he has been making. And he has been working with these foreign governments to make sure that Ethiopians who have been held there or jailed there would be released. He has been making some very symbolic but significant gestures in terms of going to hospital, for example. It just, I think, makes what it means to be Ethiopian and the question of citizenship quite meaningful again in a country where those questions are really not taken seriously by governments.
Would you agree with some observers who say that we are perhaps looking at what they characterize as a sort of political trajectory change here?
I think that is what it looks like. It's a shift in direction. I think the current government is moving away from, for example, some of the central ideologies of the previous governments, such as revolutionary democracy, even democratic centralism, because the two ideologies are inherently tied to one another. But in terms of some of the decisions that we have seen and some of the policies that are being instituted, there is an indication that there is going to be a shift in terms of policy. And I think this is very important for Ethiopia because most of the problems in Ethiopia or the supremacy of that particular elite groups for which the country has to be controlled and repressive laws have to be enacted so that that particular group can prolong its existence in power. All of those are in some ways manifestations of those ideologies, or those ideologies have been used to kind of intensify and enhance the control the government had over the population. So that is one very interesting shift in terms of direction. We're also seeing a shift in terms of economic policy, which was very political in Ethiopia, because the state takes a very active part in economic decision-making. The state is a key investor and therefore participates in the allocation of state rents. So through this announcement to liberalize certain sectors of the economy partially and some areas fully, and I think that also indicates a certain shift away from the kind of developmental state policy pursued by the previous government. So those are some pretty fundamental, I think, changes that indicate there is what people describe as a shift or a change in political trajectory. So I do agree with the fact that the country is taking a different direction, but it is only beginning because I think the problem it faces, both economic, social, and also cultural, are enormous. So I think this is a beginning, but it is a beginning that seems to have started on a very positive note in the sense that people are warming up to it and people are, again, I think, giving the very system that has been dominating, oppressing them, the benefit of the doubt under this new leadership. And I think that is a huge thing for the country.
What about the fact that when you look at Africa currently, there seems to be a trend of lifting constitutional term limits so that presidents can actually become sort of presidential monarchs? What about the fact that Abiy Ahmed is in fact suggesting a possible amendment of the Ethiopian constitution in order to actually introduce term limits on the prime ministership? Normally, of course, you don't expect parliamentary systems to have term limits.
Exactly. It is not consistent with parliamentary conventions to have term limit on the head of the executive, which is the prime minister. And I think it is interesting. I mean, it is very much part of both symbolic and concrete steps that he has been taking in terms of redefining public authority and leadership in that country. So whether they will do that or not is a different question. But I think the fact that somebody who is in the position of the prime minister would have the courage to propose that terms have to be limited, and so that individuals would know that they have a very short period of time in power, and they would use that time to advance agendas that they promised that they'd look to it. I think that is a very important step and very much a departure from the kind of predominant position in Africa, where those come to power in most cases change the constitution to allow themselves more terms. So again, I think that is also part of why the prime minister is drawing such an interest and attention in a very positive way. And I think we shouldn't forget the fact that he is a member of the same political parties that ruled Ethiopia. In my view, the ways in which things have changed this particular party from which Abiy comes, that is OPDO, came into power, is very significant. It's not like having a change of power from one individual to another individual within the same party. This is a coalition of parties where one was particularly dominant within the coalition and others were really simply put together by that dominant group to be used to advance political interests internally, but also to bolster its legitimacy. So in some ways, I think the kinds of change that have taken place within the party is almost as good as a new party coming to power. But the fact that people are giving these same individuals who have been in power, in some ways knew what was going on for a very long time, I think that really shows that there is something changing at the societal level in Ethiopia to which the leadership is responding. So I think the fact that there is that synergy that started actually long before Abiy became a prime minister, when a lot more people's democratic organization, OPDO, embraced the demands of the protesters and began to stand with protesters. So there's really something interesting that has changed here socially as well. And the fact that the leadership is responding to it in the way Abiy and his team did, and I think that is very encouraging. Maybe Ethiopia will be, I think, this shining example, hopefully, of democracy and human rights for the continent.
You know, we're looking at the same party, really. We're looking at the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front. And yet, you have a situation here where the new prime minister seems really to be very uniquely gifted in the sense that he's able, for example, to do the sort of things that his predecessor couldn't do. What makes this particular one tick, really? What makes him tick?
I think there are a number of factors here, and I think it's important to understand what this coalition called EPRD is. It's not a coalition of equal parties or equal partners. TPLF created EPRD in 1989, shortly before assuming state power. And they created EPRD out of former prisoners of war. There are some independent individuals, some movement that already existed before. But EPRDF is the idea of TPLF. And it's mainly put together out of individuals that had more autonomy, that had more independence. And these are not parties, except TPLF. They are not parties that are born out of the struggle of the respective community they represent. So for a very long time, until at least the days of the former prime minister, these were simply Trojan horses that are used by TPLF within the respective regions. When the prime minister passed away, Meles Zenawi passed away, I think the political dynamics in some ways changed. The deputy prime minister, who then became prime minister, Haile Mariam Desalegn, didn't really have the kinds of control, the kinds of knowledge and ability to maneuver that that Meles had. And by then, the society has also changed, and technology is some level providing people with information and tools. So the new prime minister was not able to kind of maintain the kind of control that it has. There were also, within the party itself, some voices who were somewhat demanding more power, challenging the kind of dominance that TPLF had. So with the passage of Meles, TPLF's kind of almost omnipotent power began to decline. And of course, in 2015, the Oromo protests started. Then that spread to Amhara protests. And that is where we kind of began to witness this shifting landscape where people essentially, you know, refused to accept the same kind of rules they accepted in the past, which are very oppressive, hegemonic, but nevertheless, people had no opportunity or alternative. But as that protest progressed and moved on, the government replied with overwhelming force, killing countless, I would say countless, but by now the number of people who were killed are more than 1,000 people. The death toll was very, very high. And that actually changed the nature of the question. And people began to say, how long are we going to tolerate this system? So the nature of the question changed. Then that's where you had continued use of power by the government to the point that we began to witness a certain kind of rupture, friction within the ruling coalition. Sometimes later, OPDU started to assert that it supports some of the demands of protesters. And it is that process that sort of snowballed into changing the dynamics. Now we have Abiy Ahmed as the prime minister, who has the kind of political legitimacy, political capital that his predecessor never had. His predecessor, as soon as he was appointed, they appointed, the parties appointed, four other deputy prime ministers to him, something that never existed when Meles Zenawi was the prime minister. So he wasn't really able to operate, even if he had good intentions. I don't know what his intentions were. I now realize that he wasn't actually as bad as we thought he was. I think he played some very important role in terms of making the current change possible. He resigned, as you know. He played a crucial role in making sure that Abiy is elected as well. But, you know, that be that as it may, one of the reasons why Abiy seems to have the kind of power and confidence and courage it has is because he came to power at a time when the political landscape has changed, when the relationship between TPLF and other parties is radically transformed. There is this alliance that is emerging between the Oromos and Amharas, OPDO and the Amhara National Democratic Movement. The two of them together constitute about 65 or so percent of the seats in parliament. So from a kind of a political point of view, from a legitimacy point of view, Abiy had everything as well as he came to power to push those reforms through. Once he came to power, I think he did a lot of work in terms of consolidating and strengthening his hand and therefore able to even dismiss the chief of the army and the intelligence.
Well, time happens not to be our best ally, Dr. Awol Kassim. Hello. It was a pleasure interacting with you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. Now, joining us here in the studio are three distinguished guests. Nunu Wako, political analyst and a regular correspondent on VOA's Upfront. Dr. Musmaku Aslat, former senior diplomatic official at the Ethiopian Foreign Ministry. And last but not least, King Solomon himself, Solomon Abate Gebrey Mariam, a VOA Horn of Africa reporter. We reached out to Ethiopian government officials to participate in today's program, but due to circumstances beyond their control, they were not able to do so. Well, I have to come to you and say I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Let me come to you, Nunu Wako. You know, in Kiswahili, Wako means yours. Does that mean that you belong to Straight Talk Africa now?
I do today.
Interesting.
I do today.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You listened to your compatriot, Dr. Awol.
Yeah.
Your reaction?
You know, I 100% agree with his assessment of what is going on in Ethiopia right now. But I think I would be remiss if I don't mention the pressure that was also put on the Ethiopian government from the diaspora community and all of the exiled political figures who put pressure not just on the government externally, but also the donor nations that were supporting a very repressive, aggressive, and brutal government on its own society. So all of that change came about, one, because they were having internal issues, and two, because they were also external pressures. And I think with Prime Minister Ahmed, things are definitely shifting. He's definitely what you call, you know, the sore thumb that sticks out. Mm. Although he came up within the TPLF and EPRD system, we are witnessing that he is a different set of mind. He has a bigger picture. He believes in a society that he's going to lead. He's the first leader in Ethiopia's history who traveled the country to just hear his own society. What is your grievances? What can we do? What is not working? And no, you know, the decisions are not going to come from top down. We're going to empower the local government to make sure that these changes take place. And it was a first for Ethiopia. Ethiopians themselves were like, what is he on tour? This is not a tour, because that's not something that they are used to, because they don't know that leaders are supposed to be invested in their society. You're supposed to grow your country based on what the society is demanding. One is openness, two is economic stability, and three is free market. The private sector needs to open. And four is investing resources into human capital. All these youth in Ethiopia, out of that 100 million, 75 is below 35. They need to work.
The demographic changes.
The demographic has changed.
What about you, Dr. Aslat? Your reaction?
Well, basically, I follow the optimism of Dr. Awal and also of the distinguished lady here, that some change has happened, that Dr. Abiy has been responsible for such a huge uproar of support, especially in the countryside, within the country, because essentially it appears as though he's coming out of total dictatorship, able to see problems openly and talk candidly and also with confidence and with directness, unused in the political system of which he belongs, of course. There is no change of governance, change of only the leader. I disagree a little bit with the diaspora issue, because the diaspora has no impact. Where the diaspora has been demonstrating, complaining, writing letters for the last 27 years. Nothing has ever happened. So what happened, to my judgment, is that they feel cornered. They are tired. They have been there 27 years. They are an absolute dictatorship, absolute dictatorship. It's a type of government that has never had any internal problems. Like, for example, the Derg started shooting, the previous government, they started shooting each other the very first, second year. These ones have been solidly committed to their agenda. And their agenda is very sinister indeed. It is to control the country to their, whatever they call, ethnic, tribal, whatever, for that purpose. And that started to get old, people started complaining a lot about it. As Dr. Awal mentioned, the youth, it's not only in the Oromia regions, all over the country that have been demonstrating. What I see now happening is they are using him as a safety valve, or a sort of diminishing the tension in a way where they can probably reorganize and come in a different way, because nothing has really changed. The constitution is still there, which is a very divisive one. he finally, when he wanted to come and address the diaspora here, they told him, you have to lift at least the state of emergency. And then the state of emergency was lifted. It has been a very, very, very good, positive leader, especially for the neighboring countries. They have seen a real change coming, and they have offered him a lot of really legs up so that they could be empowered to do more things in his country.
I see.
That's a very, very positive step taken by the neighboring countries.
What about you, Solomon? Let's face it, the Prime Minister happens to come from Oromia. And it is the Oromo who were engaged really in mass protests since 2015. And you're talking about in the neighborhood of almost a quarter of a million have actually been killed in the process. Is it therefore an accident that he should in fact be the agent of change, or at least what appears to be change?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me again, Shaka.
You're most welcome.
To this show. This question maybe should be answered by a political analyst, not by a journalist, a reporter like me, or his party. However, since his emergence from day one, we hear that he speaks on behalf of Ethiopia, not on behalf of the Oromo people. He is calling for unity. He is calling for national integrity. So I think this comes from the nature of Dr. Abiy, or as perfectly the reporter who brought the video together at the beginning of this show characterized him as Usain Bolt, which is really
the American sprinter.
Yes.
Which fits him, you know. I don't see any other country which is changing so fast these days in socio-economic and political terms in the world.
Mm.
So, and he is spearheading this change. What I can say is this is an Ethiopian leader, and his nature dictates these changes, I think.
But he's a sort of insider.
That is true.
Sort of insider, he's a senior military officer.
He is a member of the party,
mm-hmm.
the party which didn't change even its name yet,
yes.
still remains Revolutionary Democratic Front. There is no indication that it would change its program. So that's why maybe there are a lot of people out there who looks, you know, to these changes with some doubt. They're suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because Dr. Abiy wants to be an agent of change? Is this sustainable? Does he have any backing from his party?
He definitely must have.
Well,
he can't be a lone ranger. He wouldn't do it.
Yeah, because the party gathered that in the middle of February, and they did some good in-depth assessment, as they said, and they promised all these changes. And because of that, this new leader has emerged, I think, within the party itself. So now he is working on the country, you know. He is working to change, you know, the course of the country. But one day, in the near future, I hope he will get back to his party and start working with the members.
I see. Well, on that note, thank you so much for your insight. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including a social media segment. We want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming live on Facebook. To watch our show, just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa And don't forget to share it with your friends. We are on Twitter and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Ethiopia Politics, and we'll air some of your comments later in the show. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Most welcome, of course, Esther Gidhi, you what? And of course, this is Trade Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick. Take it away, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Shaka. We've received great social media feedback this week. Ethiopia's parliament approved the government's decision to lift a six-month state of emergency 2 months earlier than planned. The government imposed the emergency rule in February in an effort to curb widespread anti-government protests sparked by planned development plans for Addis Ababa. This leads us to our question of the week, in which we asked, how do you feel about Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's early reforms, and do you believe he is the right person to move the country forward? We'll start things off here with a tweet from Ruthie, who says, you cannot choose a better person. Most Ethiopians feel good about him, even when they are not happy about some of his moves. But hey, we are not used to this sort of sensible leadership. All in less than 3 months. May it continue. We have another tweet from Frederick Mwaka from Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, who says, Ethiopia's prime minister is taking the right step at the right time, and I believe these steps will promote unity among Ethiopians and Eritreans. And now to our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Manny Kachele from Panda, Tanzania, who writes, it's too soon to say if Prime Minister Abiy is the right person. In Africa, we have a countless number of unreliable leaders. That's why the Ibrahim Prize for Achievement in African Leadership, for example, is not often given to African leaders who are in power. How can you award someone a prize if tomorrow they will be mercilessly menacing their own people? Africa is not becoming hopeless. It has always been hopeless. And let's go to another comment from a Facebook fan, Vincent Atuma from Asaba, Nigeria, who says, the people of Ethiopia have given Prime Minister Abiy their mandate. Whether or not he is the right person will be determined by his level of performance. He looks promising, but only time will tell. And our last Facebook comment comes from William Kokulu from Monrovia, Liberia, who writes, predicting his future at this early point is something to look at critically. I hope and pray that he is honest and direct in addressing the issues the country is facing. And a reminder for you that we do appreciate all of your feedback. If you are a new fan, do drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. And you can comment on our Facebook page. Just enter these keywords, Straight Talk Africa. And be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. You can also join our YouTube channel. Just sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And do follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa also streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, where you can simply go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page. That is on our website. And you can watch us live on your mobile device. Download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what is ahead for next week's show.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll look into the controversial topic of term limits for African leaders. New Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed wants to amend the constitution to introduce term limits on his post. But that's in stark contrast to many of Africa's entrenched leaders who have sought to extend their time as head of state. Term limits versus leaders for life on the next Straight Talk Africa.
And that's where we'll leave it for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and your guests obviously have a lot of social media comments to discuss, so I'm going to hand it back to you.
Thanks, Heidi. And today, of course, we are talking about Ethiopian politics. Our guest, Nunu Wako, political analyst and regular correspondent on VOA's Upfront, Dr. Musmaku Asalat, a former senior diplomatic official at the Ethiopian Foreign Ministry, and Solomon Abate, of course, who is a reporter of Horn of Africa. We reached out to Ethiopian government officials to participate in today's program, but due to circumstances beyond their control, they were not able to do so. I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa. You're most welcome. Let me come to you again, Solomon, because we did have an agreement earlier, but it looks like it didn't quite pan out because there seems to be some technical problems in the studio. You know, what do you really think that needs to be done that hasn't been done so far by the new Ethiopian authorities that can actually make an average Ethiopian believe that these apparent changes are irreversible?
Let me start from your last question. From the outset, many say, Dr. Abiy set the bar so high, and he and his government are pushing that bar higher and higher with every single emerging new day. It would be already unthinkable to reverse those changes and the hope without a serious bitter cost. So I don't think it is reversible. And many say that. There is hope. However, people expect a lot, even though things are changing so fast, even journalists started complaining that they cannot cope with the changes going on in the country, you know. So, and these changes are big changes. Some of them looked untouchable, you know. The buttons he already pressed are really huge. So, still, there is a lot remaining on the ground, things to be changed. For instance, there are very restrictive laws which have to be abolished, according to many critics, citizens, like the terror law, like the social civic society and organizations law. They are, they say they are very restrictive. And in presence of these laws, these changes are under serious threat. So the government must act upon these changes sooner, not later.
I see. Nunu, what about the olive branch to Asmara? We're talking about Badme.
Yes. You know, that war has been going on almost as old as I am. And for me to see that decision come from Addis Ababa during my lifetime is the most exciting political decision that has taken place on the continent for a neighboring country that is culturally identical to Ethiopia to have such a turmoil with his own brother, as Dr. Abiy has said, it's inconceivable. We should be the best of friends to Eritrea. The benefit of having a bilateral relationship with Eritrea would benefit Ethiopia, which is a landlocked country. It would make getting all of our needed economic, growth easier if we have that relationship with Eritrea.
Not to mention, by the way, that it was, in fact, the Eritreans and, of course, Isaias Afwerki, who actually helped the TPLF to seize power in Ethiopia.
Absolutely. It is. You know, they're actually, if my historical context serves me correct, they are related, correct?
Yes.
So they are truly brothers.
And we are basically one people, really.
One people. And I think the fact that Dr. Abiy has taken this drastic step to extend that olive branch to Eritrea is the biggest paradigm shift in Ethiopian politics, because that war drains Ethiopia's fund. Those funds that are going to protect that border, mm-hmm. that has been decided that that town belongs to
International Eritrea. Tribunal, in fact, had ruled in favor of Eritrea.
Eritrea, back in 2000.
Correct.
It's just Ethiopia was 18 not...
18 years.
18 years.
Not
Ethiopia
delivering.
Was not willing to be acceptance of that decision. For that decision to come at this time, when Ethiopia is internally in turmoil, in order to correct what's internally in turmoil, you also need to correct what's externally a threat to you. So that olive branch should go a long way, and hopefully Eritreans are ready to accept that branch, as we have not heard
anything from
Eritrea. They are very quiet. Perhaps they were not prepared for this decision to come. But I think you would agree with me that for Ethiopia, yes, we've lost so many of our sisters and brothers, but opening up that door to say, hey, you know, let's just end this war, would allow Ethiopia to grow in a whole different way. And it also allows, you know, you have to preach. And what you preach, you have to practice. We can't negotiate peace elsewhere, and we're not negotiating peace with the one person we should had been negotiating peace
you
with.
You preach water and drink wine, red wine. Let me ask you, Dr. Aslat, we're talking about Badami. Some say population about 15,000. Was it really worth it when you think about tens of thousands of people on both sides who actually died?
I have a different take about Badami, because it is a diversionary war which was concocted by Meles Zenawi himself and to create this thing, because they had other agendas to follow. They went to war. They almost captured Assab. If the country wants support, they could have got hold of it. But he told the people to retreat, not to go further. And then they made an arrangement whereby they chose the lawyers and they chose the arbitrators. And they said they will accept the final decision given. And when the decision came, first they tried to say it was in our favor. The foreign minister went out and talked that it was in Ethiopia's favor. And then they said, well, because then the reaction came from their own locality, from that area, and they said, well, no peace, no war. I consider it the most expensive the diversionary war of the current times, because on the Ethiopian side 70,000 died, on the Eritrean side 17,000 died.
About 20,000.
Okay, I compare this to a very famous and a very where no loss of life diversionary conflict has been met. It's the 18th century, the Fashoda incident.
You may be interested to know that when the International Tribunal ruled in favor of Eritrea, Straight Talk Africa was in its infancy, and we're having an edition on Ethiopia with the ambassador of Ethiopia and the ambassador of Eritrea. in the studios here in Washington, guess what? Prime Minister Meles Zenawi himself happened to be watching from Addis Ababa.
I remember
day,
very well. Yes.
And he personally called into the show, pretending to be a baby. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting.
Yes, you know it very well, yeah.
He was a very, very interesting man. And I remember, frankly, somebody talking in my ear, someone talking with, you know, with incredible confidence. Somebody that sounded very authoritative in my ear, essentially correcting his ambassador about the issue. Very interesting man. Wouldn't you say?
Well, that shows how Straight Talk Africa is influential, that the Prime Minister of Ethiopia, that's the most powerful person in the Horn of Africa, sitting and watching the show.
But what about the fact that
from its infancy,
he could actually find time to be able to do that?
I don't know what he tried to correct, what the ambassador said, and what the Prime Minister's response or reaction to that was. However, Badima was not about 15,000 people. It's not about a piece of land. For both countries, it's about pride at this time.
Ego.
Super
whatever, ego.
Whatever you
super
call
ego.
It.
Corporate
it
ego.
Is, yeah. So there are a lot of critics who say these two countries may give anything in exchange for Badima. So it's not the question of 15,000 or 100,000 people live there.
Now, about this olive branch, there are some people who have been saying, really, that the reason he probably did it, the new prime minister, was because Eritrea seemed to be getting very close to Egypt. And Egypt, obviously, does have some problems with Ethiopia, especially with the Renaissance Dam. From the Blue Nile. What about that? You're talking about someone, obviously, who is using the old tradition of dividing your enemies, basically.
This is, you know, one of those big changes we are witnessing these days, you know. Only in the last less than 2 weeks since I had been to your show, there have been big changes taking place in the country, and one of those is the trip to Cairo, where the Prime Minister reiterated his assurances that it will not adversely impact Egypt's interests. So I think there is already a common understanding between the two, and what is interesting is the international acceptance, recognition of this prime minister is growing with every move he makes, you know. And he was able to secure a release of Ethiopian prisoners in Cairo.
Yes.
And he did same thing in Sudan and in Saudi Arabia. He was decorated with the highest award of Uganda.
In Uganda?
By President Museveni. So these are, you know, changes that returning the respect for Ethiopia, international respect for Ethiopia, and that would help accomplish its mission, its targets, you know, for economic development, for infrastructure construction and building. That is part of, you know, his moves.
No. What about the issue of the Nile? We're talking, of course, about two Niles, Blue Nile and White Nile, but particularly the Blue Nile, given, of course, what is happening in Ethiopia in terms of trying to, you know, build these dams, which will obviously generate energy for the region and what have you. What about this agreement of 1929, which was signed between the British and the Egyptians? Mm. And Egypt happens to have veto power about the usage of the Nile, even though the Nile does not actually, the last time I checked, originate from Egypt.
So the Nile originates from two different countries, plus others, that other rivers from Rwanda, Chad, and so on. That
Burundi
dumps,
might
Burundi,
come in, way in and whatever.
Exactly, that dump into whether it's the White Nile or the Blue Nile. But the Blue Nile is the highest contributor to the Nile River at 75%.
Correct.
And the Blue Nile not only contributes water, but it also wipes out Ethiopia's fertile soil and dumps it into Egypt. And for an agreement to be signed between Egypt and British over an uncolonized country's property, that is a violation of a sovereign nation. How can one sit at a table and determine what Ethiopia can and cannot do with a resource that actually originates
in Ethiopia? Any particular reason why Ethiopia was not, in fact, at that meeting? Because let's face it, the other countries were still under colonialism.
Exactly.
But Ethiopia was not a colon of anybody.
Maybe that has a lot to do with it, the fact that they knew they couldn't come, they knew they couldn't conquer Ethiopia. We might be internally at each other's throat, but when it comes to the interest and the security and the resource of Ethiopia, Ethiopians are one. There's no division there. And yes, I do agree, even though this is an allegation that Eritrea and Egypt were becoming too close, where it became a security threat to Ethiopia, especially with the building of this huge dam on the mouth of the Abay River. Of course, Ethiopia is going to do whatever it takes to mend that relationship with Egypt. Egypt will receive the amount of water it needs to cultivate its agricultural grounds, but Ethiopia has the right to do whatever Ethiopia wants with that water.
I hear you. Let's go to the lifeline. Let's go to the lifeline of the show before we come to you. The lifeline of the show, because there is a gentleman by the name Sahai who apparently is on the line, trying to ask you some questions. Good afternoon, Sahai. You are welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Good afternoon, Sahai. I can't hear you.
Good afternoon, Dr. Sally, my good friend. Can you hear me?
I am hugely terrific. I can hear you loud and clear now.
Thank you so much.
Are you the Sahai that we went to school together many, many years ago in New York?
Yes, my good friend. Albany, New York, to be exact. Yes.
Very interesting. A gallant Ethiopian, of course. Gallant Ethiopian. Yes. What is your question?
Yes, first of all, I am glad and I'm happy to be given this opportunity. My question is very brief. Recently, February 16 to 19, the Ethiopian All Party Stakeholders Convention was held in Seattle, Washington. Among other things, the convention discussed about good governance, opening up political landscape for all opposition parties, and discussion on formation of transitional government. Our new prime minister, everybody like, I like him as well, a very positive person, but I didn't see much of addressing the those subjects like a transitional government or opening up of this political landscape. Can one of you there, Dr. Asrat, or any one of your guests can shed some light on that area?
Thank you.
Is there any discussion? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sahai Demeke, the man from Ethiopia, all the way from Tennessee. Would you like to react to that, Dr. Asrat?
Yes, this is a very, very pertinent question that he asked. That's why it has become smoke and mirrors, in a way. He's a very attractive person, a very good person, a very...
Very
charismatic person.
Very
Everybody
smart.
Likes him here in the diaspora. When they say that he's not coming, so many hundreds and thousands complained because they wanted to see him. But there are serious things happening after he came to power, especially on the Amara. they were displaced. I can give you the areas that have been displaced.
You have a minute.
The Badele, East Wallaga, Elem Wallaga, Jimma, Benishangul, Benchi, 2,000 families, people killed. He never addressed any of these issues. These are very, very critical issues, even Amnesty International.
And, has he been asked?
He has been asked. He has never answered.
If he happened to be watching Straight Talk Africa from Addis Ababa right now,
yes, please.
Could you please look into that camera and talk to him for a minute?
Yes, really, Honorable Prime Minister, you have been a most charming and the most successful Prime Minister ever had. You have galvanized the nation in a way. But still, there is a big problem you have not addressed. And you have been asked several times. People have demonstrated to palace. People have come to ask you questions, to address the issue of the Amhara displacement, which has become even worse. There is a tendency of people from where they are displaced that now that you are a prime minister, they can do whatever they want. It is really important that you address this issue. And moreover, there is a second issue that has been raised, the fundamental issue of the constitution to be amended. Article 39 is the most destructive article of the whole thing. People want it to be dismantled. People want the Khalil thing to be dismantled. Of course, you reach there in time, but
I think
the Khalil area is also a tribal enclave, which has to go.
I think that, Dr. Aslat, your points are well made.
Thank you.
Okay, just to briefly to give some facts here. The OPDO, the Oromo People's Democratic Organization, that is a ruling party in Oromia, mm-hmm. Yesterday concluded its meeting and addressed this displacement issue. And they held those who are responsible, and some 3,000 members of the party were purged, and some were arrested, and some were downgraded, from their positions. So I think they are already starting to address the issue. That's and concern on the Badumbe case, there are some opposition in that area.
From Tigray
yes. area.
Yes.
However, there is a big call, to listen to the Ethiopian government offer at this time, because, it is a big commitment at this point to accept it and promising to work towards its implementation.
But I think that you really need also to be patient, Ethiopians, because let's face it, this prime minister was sworn in only in April.
Yes. Yes.
Let's face it, yes. you need to be a bit patient.
I agree with you 100%, yes.
Honestly. Yeah. Well, on that note, our guests were Nunu Wako and Dr. Musmak Aslat, Solomon Abate, and Dr. Kasim Alo, and VOA's, of course, Solomon Abate is right here, but I was going to say that you were with us in the first part of the show, but we are right here. Well, thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, and for many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, Today Break Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Ethiopia. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.